The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Ben Shapiro is continuing his tour right now, so we have some really good clips of it, the best of which are with Stephen A. Smith. And Stephen A. Smith, obviously, he's a liberal, he's on the left, but he's more reasonable. And you can see in these videos that I'm about to show you that he is actively becoming more and more red-pilled as Ben Shapiro talks to him. Also, stick around to the end because we're going to be breaking down the latest controversy with Sean Ryan. Some big-time lies that he and a guest spread about the most conservative group in America. Stick around for that. So Ben Shapiro went on Stephen A. Smith's show, and people have been floating for a while that Stephen A. Smith might be gearing up for a run for the presidency. And Ben just asks him point blank. Here's what he says.
Do I think that there are Democrats who I would consider to be interesting? Stephen A. Buddy.
What?
You going to run? What's the story?
I ain't trying to do that. I mean, listen, the only reason I say, honestly, Ben, I'll tell this to you right now in front of your face. The only reason I say that I keep the door open and I consider it because I'm so disgusted with what I'm seeing. I'm a centrist, which I know you are not, okay? But to me, I'm the kind of person that I could be in office and, like, yeah, that's a damn good idea. And I don't care that you're an opponent. It makes sense. It makes sense. If it's good for America, it's good for America. Do the right thing. As opposed to being a prisoner to somebody on the left that's or the right or the extreme right that's padding my wallets and I'm just doing what's in my best interest instead of the best interest of the country. And I'm not down for that. I'm living a very good life. I have no desire to be a politician. But I do leave the door open because I'm not scared to confront corruption. And I believe anybody that's not looking out for the best interests of the country, I consider them tantamount to corrupt.
Yeah. Okay, so surprisingly, Stephen A. actually has a pretty good read on politics, I think. If you're willing to just simply call out good politics or good policy for good policy and bad policy for bad policy and not be partisan about it, I think politics is probably not for you, to be honest, because you're just too normal if you just want the best for our country. It's just too simple because it's as complicated as it is. Our country really is built on this idea that bad men most likely are going to be in charge. That's literally what it's built on. That's kind of the James Madison theory of it. It's what Milton Friedman said. I think that's absolutely true. The thing that protects our country from corruption is conflicting interests as well as checks and balances. It's not that good men are necessarily going to be in charge. Again, that's sad, but it's true. And that's why Biden didn't blow up America when he was president, for example. It got a lot worse. It wasn't great. Got harder for a lot of good Americans, but ultimately those checks and balances stood, and that's why Trump was able to come in and reverse a lot of his disastrous policies. It seems in this that Ben Shapiro feels the exact same way about politics because Stephen turned it on him. I thought this was really interesting. Asked him if he would ever be president. Take a look.
What I've said, and someone once asked me, if you ran for president, which I would never do, if you ran for president, what would you campaign on? And what I said is, I would campaign on, I'm going to get everybody out of the way so you can solve your own problems. That's all I can do. I can't solve your problems for you. You can solve your problems for you. What I can do is remove the obstructions that stand in your way, that, you know, policies that for example, are biased against you or a group like you. Like I can get rid of that, but I can't make you succeed. Mm-hmm. I can't make a poor person rich. What I can do is create conditions where if a poor person makes good decisions, that they will get richer. Right, that's the best I can do. But no politician is going to tell you that because if a politician says that, then it puts the onus back on you to make good decisions.
And that is the truth. There is literally zero incentive for a politician to tell you that you don't need them. That's their whole mantra. They want you to believe that you are dependent on them, whether it's for welfare checks, whether it's for retirement, healthcare, regulation. All of that is centered on the idea that you need a politician and that you are their servant, not the other way around. What Ben is talking about is actually the right way of governing, the actual moral way of governing, and it's the opposite. It's the message is this. It's very simple. It's you're already enough. As a person, you're enough. I'm just going to make sure that nobody tries to come and take away what makes you great. And frankly, that's Jesus's message. That is proper governing. That's proper leadership. And now you have the decision, again, to use that greatness or not. But you don't have to use it. I mean, if you want to just be mediocre in your life, you can. That's freedom. But if you have the greatness, which I think everybody does to some degree, and you want to use it, you can do something about it. And it's a much more uplifting message. It's one that doesn't lead you toward tyranny, I think, which it seems we're closer toward each election cycle. So all of that was kind of the friendly banter part of the interview between Stephen and Ben. But then Ben kicks into gear. He goes into red pill Stephen. He's actually trying to convince him. It works pretty well. Take a look.
But America is not what it used to be. Wouldn't you concede that?
No.
That you wouldn't concede that it's not what it used to be?
No, I think that America is in many ways better than it ever was. I mean, I think that—
Why?
Because, I mean, name a time in American history that was better for, say, black Americans.
I can't. I'm not going to deny that. I don't think it's great right now, but I'm certainly not going to imply that this is as bad as it was in the 60s and the 50s and beyond, and before.
Even the 80s. I mean, like, right. I mean, like,
obviously, to some degree, I mean, no question about that. I'm not going to make that argument.
This is sort of the problem that I have is people kind of look back to a storied past and they tell themselves a story about it. On the right, they tend to say things like, well, if it were only like the 1950s, and if only we had the manufacturing jobs we had in the 1950s. And I kind of sit there and I say, well, really? I don't think you'd want to sit in like a Ford factory in a rivet 8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Like you sit in an air-conditioned office and your main physical threat is sciatica. Mm-hmm. I really don't think that's the same thing. And you know, there tends to be a belief that your parents had it better than you did. No, your parents lived in an era where you had to go to a payphone to call your family and spend $1 a minute to do so. And now you have a magical machine in your pocket that gets you any piece of information you could ever want instantaneously. And you can order any product for cheaper than anybody in human history, and it will be at your door inside of 2 days. So that's not to say there aren't problems. There for sure are problems. But you know, the idea that anybody on Earth or in all of human history who's airdropped into the United States wouldn't look around and go, holy, like, this is kind of amazing.
He's absolutely right, in my opinion. For all the problems economically that we have now, it has never been better. Not even close. I know there's problems. For sure we've got problems. But people in the 70s did not even have AC for the most part. They couldn't communicate with someone unless they were in the same room with them, again, for the most part. So, and they're not going on vacations like people are today to other countries. Vacation back then meant driving 12 hours to the nearest beach in America, unless you were super, super rich. And this brings up a really interesting point, I think, that Ben should have brought up, but he didn't. And it's that the whole Trump slogan and the movement itself is called MAGA, Make America Great Again. And the important word in that is again. So what are we talking about when we say again? And I fear that too many people have taken the position that the again is the economy and not the culture. Because believe me, we don't want America to be like the 70s again economically. People who say that are just not thinking straight. They had 14% inflation at one time. Interest rates were incredibly high. But culturally, on the other hand, yes, we want America to once again be like the 60s and 70s in terms of the importance of the nuclear family, birth rates, closed borders, American patriotism. Absolutely yes, for everybody. But economically, which is what a lot of populists on the right are kind of pushing for right now, no, they're trying to falsely spread that. Ben makes the point that populism is actually more in line with the left right now than conservatism. I think it's a compelling point, and I think that Stephen actually got convinced.
The idea that we see in, I think, this New York mayoral race, which is that there's an affordability problem. The reason there's an affordability problem is because rich people exist. Billionaires, they should stop existing. If we just didn't have rich people, or if we somehow punished rich people, somehow this would make poor people richer. Whenever people talk about income inequality, I always start to curdle a little bit, because the reality is the problem is not income inequality. The problem is poor people need to be richer. Mm-hmm. Okay, the entire premise of the idea of income inequality is that rich people are rich because they're stealing from poor people. That's false. That's not true. Bill Gates did not get rich by stealing from poor people. Jeff Bezos did not get rich by stealing from poor people. That is not how you get rich.
Okay.
Unless you're living in a hunter-gatherer society, in which case your wealth is very much limited to how many berries and deer limbs are in your society. The way that people get rich is by innovating, risk-taking, creating better goods and services, but a politics that says your problems, your upset at the world, is not your own fault. Mm-hmm. It's the fault of the free market. It's the fault of private property. It's the fault of that billionaire over there. Let's go and tear him down. That is a very, very dangerous policy. But
the reason why it's dangerous is because of the fact that it's false. The common response, this is all socialists and communists say, the common response to something like what Ben is saying there is that he's just a bootlicker. He just loves billionaires. But it's actually quite the opposite. And this is where I think the left is suffering. I think conservatives could do a better job of messaging. Anyone with a basic knowledge of economics knows that Zohran Mamdani's policy actually hurts the working class more than the billionaires, because billionaires can weather the storm of inflationary policy. They can. It sucks, but they've got most of their net worth in assets, and those assets are appreciating at a rate faster than the inflation. But working people don't have a lot of their net worth tied up in assets. Maybe their home, but that's about it. Poor people don't weather inflation well, and teaching people that they're screwed and can't do anything about their situation is a recipe for disaster. That's all socialists peddle. That's all Democrats are peddling right now. It's very self-fulfilling. When you teach people that they can do whatever they want, they actually go and do whatever they want for the most part, and then they get rich, and that's good. That's the goal. The goal is not eliminating wealth inequality. I think that's a stupid goal. Wealth inequality does not matter. I've had several debates with people on this, from the left, from the right. I cannot get a straight answer. Maybe you can tell me in the comments below, if you're a leftist listening, why wealth inequality on its own matters. It's a thing that socialists tell themselves matter because they are jealous and envious. The thing that a real patriot wants, someone that actually loves his fellow citizens, is for everyone to be rich, regardless of if someone is much richer than that other rich person. Before we get to the rest of the news, the progressive left is a cult, guys. I talk all about it in my book, A New Cult. Go check it out right now. I talk about some crazy stories over the last few years. I talk about a lot of COVID-related things that I can't, frankly, talk about because of big tech, but I can't talk about there. So go check it out right now. The link is in the description below. Sean Ryan, who is a really, really large conservative podcast host, if you haven't heard of him, is coming under fire right now, and he should. He is under fire because he had a guest named Nathan Apfel on his show that attacked the most conservative group in America, members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or Mormons, as a lot of people know. As many of you know, I am a member of the church. And here's the thing. This episode, and I want to talk about it because it's just a lie. I'm not here as a representative of the church. It has nothing to do with that. I'm not trying to convince people in this video, because most people who watch this show are not members of the church, to become members of the church. I'm just talking about how this is isolating the most conservative group in America and how that's a massive mistake for conservatives. Here's the thing. This episode was on mega churches and priestcraft and how churches can be very corrupt. I actually think it's a great topic. I think it's fantastic. I've got no problems with it. I think that's a huge problem in America. I think having a discussion, even about my own church, by the way, it's totally fine. No problems with that whatsoever. The problem is that Nathan Apfel went on and made some incredibly egregious and big lies. And I'm going to show some clips of them right here. I say lies and not mistakes because they are lies so egregious that you could have fact-checked them with a simple Google search. Usually when you have people on these podcasts, they're hard hitters. They've done some like deeper research than the average person. That's why they're on there, so that people can learn about them. The things that he says, anybody could just go look up and be like, oh, that's just completely false. And for those of you who aren't members of the church, again, you're probably thinking, what does this have to do with politics or conservatism? We are seeing conservative political commentators all over, not just Sean Ryan with this episode, tell huge lies about the most conservative church in America and about the most conservative group in America, I believe. And it's only a matter of time, this is my fear, before that group determines they are done with the conservative movement. I'm not talking about the Republican Party. The Republican Party is part of the conservative movement in a sense. But I'm talking about a lasting movement to promote things like patriotism, the nuclear family, birth rates, etc. It's not a small number, by the way, people. There's kind of this misnomer out there that members of the church are just this tiny little group in America that have no political relevance. It's 7 million Mormons in the United States, many of which, by the way, live in Nevada and Arizona, which are swing states. I actually think that if you look at the numbers in the counties, there's a huge reason why Nevada and Arizona went towards Trump. It's because of members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and the hard line that Democrats were taking with abortion, which members of the church don't like. So the Republican Party and conservatives cannot afford to lose them. With that lengthy intro out of the way, here is what Sean Ryan and his guests said about the most conservative group in America.
The LDS Church petitioned the IRS to add the term auxiliary in front of church in the 60s. And it was men's clubs back in the day. So men would meet up, smoke cigars, you know, hang out, talk. And they're like, this is technically church. And so the IRS added this term auxiliary to their definition. Well, there's no definition, black and white definition of what an auxiliary is. So if there's no definition, anything can be an auxiliary. So the LDS church registers their investment fund as an auxiliary, which means that auxiliary is technically a church. It gets the same benefits that the church gets. Flash forward 27 years, there were $300 billion, and it's all for-profit ventures registered as churches.
Wow. $300 billion.
$300 billion in market assets. The LDS church will hit $1 trillion in market assets in the next decade, all under the guise of a religious institution. And the crazy part is not $1 of that. Now it's a hedge fund because they're hedging. That not a single dollar of that fund has ever gone to humanitarian purposes or even the church.
So right off the bat, clue one, that this man knows nothing about the church. He says that the auxiliary started with men wanting to smoke cigars. It's against one of the commandments of the church to smoke. So off to a bad start, man. you've lost your credibility from the get-go. The only thing that he says in this clip that is accurate is that the church has hundreds of billions of dollars in assets. It's absolutely true. And I'm happy about it, by the way, as a member. This includes church buildings, temples, farms, public stocks, land, private companies. If you don't like that, fair enough. That's the thing. Cool. If you don't like that as a Christian, or maybe you're an atheist, no problem with that. We can have an argument about that, whatever. But what this man lies about is that not $1 goes toward the church or humanitarian effort from that fund. And this is where the egregious lines, these lies come out. That net worth statement of $300 billion includes worship buildings. So obviously that's for church use. So already debunked. In terms of charitable donations, here's a chart of how much they've donated over the past 4 years. What you can see in 2021, if you're just listening, I'll read it out, $906 million. This was reported by the Salt Lake Tribune that hates the church, by the way. 2022, $1.02 billion. 2023, $1.36 billion. 2024, $1.45 billion. So more than $4 billion, close to $5 billion over the last 4 years. So he's making a bold-faced lie there. Again, you can argue that's not enough. You could say, look, they're worth $300 billion. They should have given $10 billion. That's an argument. But to lie and say it's just zero is pure anti-church propaganda. And this stuff pisses Latter-day Saints off, pisses me off. If you go on X right now and look up prominent LDS voices, they're pissed about this because it makes us not trust good conservative voices like Sean Ryan. And again, he's someone that I want to respect, but he's posted these clips all over social media saying the church doesn't donate money, and that's not true. They're also making the case in this video that the church should lose its 501c3 status, which obviously is that they're not taxed. And they're basically saying, and this is where I think the conservatism and the church really intersect here, is that they're saying this money would be better off with the U.S. government than with the church. And I just can't think of something less conservative than an idea like that. After that clip that I showed you at first, this is where the lies heat up big time. It gets very bad, like Joe Biden debating Donald Trump bad.
And a lot of times, like, so the LDS church is now the second largest private landowner in the U.S., 2.3 million acres.
Wow.
Tax-free. All under the guise of religion and freedom of religion.
And none of this goes to...
They have farms. And this is where the LDS church is very interesting. And we can get... Like, I really want to dissect the LDS church with you. They have farms. And so they say, hey, we're building our storehouse. So this is Old Testament Torah. So we're going to have goods and supplies in the storehouse, sufficient in God's storehouse. So they're quoting Malachi. And if you've tithed to us, if you've given your full tithe, you're going to get to enjoy the benefits of our storehouse if there's a natural disaster or if Jesus comes. So they're building their conglomerate, demanding you give 10% of your gross revenue to them, and then you'll be able to benefit from us if something happens. And here's the kicker. If you don't give your full tithe, you don't get to benefit.
How do they know?
They look at your bank statements.
They turn in their bank statements?
Every year at the LDS church, you have to go in, and I can't remember what it's called, but it's a meeting with your bishop, and you have to discuss your finances, and he says, have you been a full tithe payer? And if you haven't, it's literally you're docked. And if you're not a full tithe payer, you don't get your temple recommend. And if you don't have your temple recommend, you don't get to heaven with your family.
So I have some personal insights to what he's saying. I was actually a missionary in Washington State. That's where I served. The LDS Church owns farms up in Washington State. They have like a ton of land, like tons and tons of land. They are not joking when they say that they own, you know, the second most private land in the United States. That's absolutely true. I have personally picked crops, boxed potatoes in Washington State, like a lot, and given truckloads of it to poor people and also just random people. I don't know if they paid tithing. Most of them weren't even members. So it's just a bold-faced lie. I just don't even know where he's getting it from. I mean, he's probably got it from some random YouTube video of someone who hates the church. I also happen to be a clerk in the church. Again, for those of you who, you know, the church is very different from other denominations. If you're a Christian of another denomination, in the LDS church, we have a lay ministry, meaning that nobody gets paid. So essentially, we all get assignments, and that's how the church runs. And those assignments change from time to time. You might have it for 2-3 years. My assignment right now is that I'm the clerk of my congregation, which essentially means I'm responsible to take records of people who have been baptized, for example, or people who move into our congregation or outside. And the other thing that I'm responsible for is distributing all of the welfare for my congregation. So I'm very actually involved in the things that he's talking about. I'm also in charge of setting up this tithing meeting that he talks about with the bishop. Let me be very clear. Nobody shows their bishop bank statements. And that's never been done, at least in my lifetime, because not only am I part of that, I also do that every year. And here's how the meeting goes. He doesn't verify. He doesn't press you about it. He gives you the chance to talk to him just on, you know, about anything spiritually. And then if you have financial problems, maybe you could talk to him about that. And then you have an opportunity to confess before God that you are tithing. And that's it. And you can lie if you want. I don't recommend it, but you can. And I've done it for, let's see, I'm 24 years old. I've done it every single year of my life. And every year with different bishops, it's gone the exact same way. And you do not need, this is one of the biggest lies, you do not need to be a full tithe payer to get welfare from the church in any capacity. That's it, just a bold-faced lie. In fact, you don't even have to be a member of the church. All you have to do is talk to the bishop. And if he feels that you have a need, he can distribute that welfare through the clerk, as I talked about. So here's an interesting graph that's been going on X. Again, intersecting with politics here. The poverty rates by states. If you look, the lowest is in Utah. Why is that, you might ask? Why is poverty so low in Utah? And by the way, really low in Wyoming and Idaho, which have a ton of members as well. The reason why, and you know, it's very bad in New Mexico, New York, Washington, D.C. The reason why is because the church has successfully privatized welfare. We do not rely on the welfare of the federal government. If you look at what Utah actually takes from the federal government, it's pretty much the only conservative state that does not take a lot from the government. Leftists make this point a lot, that there are red states that take a lot from the government. It's absolutely true. They do take a lot from the federal government. Utah is an outlier in that. And the reason why is because the church is a private form of welfare. What Sean Ryan in this clip and what Nathan would have you believe is that the church should give their money to the state, and then the state should then be in charge of the welfare. And Utah does that differently because they're not taxed, because the church is not taxed. They have all the money they need to distribute the welfare. The result of that is the lowest poverty rate by a mile in the United States. So the lies that he says at the end of that clip that I showed are just complete fabrications. And by the way, that goes, again, for about 60% of Utah are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. 40% are not. So if the welfare was only going to that 60%, I guarantee you the poverty rates would not be that low. Here's the question with all of this. Who is fabricating these lies? Where is it coming from? Nobody would love to see the church fail, and most conservative groups in America turn on Republicans more than the left. More than the left. The left wants this. That's where it's coming from. The lies are coming from leftists ultimately. And they hope to trickle it down through people who are either willfully lying like Nathan or being useful idiots like Sean Ryan. And again, it hurts me to say that because I like Sean Ryan. I like him on most things, but he is so mistaken on this and he is going to lose his LDS audience because of it. They're stupid enough to fall for it. And they do the dirty work of the leftists. Cabot Phillips over from the Daily Wire did the exact same thing just about 2 weeks ago. He posted a kind of string of slurs against the church that were completely, they're just lies about our history. you know, not controversial ones either. Like, not like, oh, yeah, he could be right. No, like ones that have been debunked time and time again. And again, where did he get these lies? I guarantee you he got them from a leftist journalist on YouTube. I guarantee you that's where it is, some YouTube channel. So again, don't fall for it, guys. Conservatives cannot afford to lose the most conservative group in America. One of my favorite things about this show is being able to interact with you guys directly, and that's why I've created my new Substack. It's completely free to you. It's a weekly newsletter that comes into your email, and I'm able to talk about things that I just can't talk about here. I'm also able to interact with you directly, so go check it out right now. The link is in the description below. Thank you so much for watching this episode, everybody. Please like the video so other great patriots like yourselves will see it. And you can tune in every single weekday at 6 p.m. Eastern for the live show, or you can watch another video right here.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.